ChatteractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 130, with Dr. Panit Pangputipong, Engineering Mindset as Applied to Cataract Surgery. This will really make you rethink how to perform cataract surgery. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have a very special guest, a brilliant ophthalmologist that you're going to learn so much from, and that is Dr. Panit Pangputipong from Thailand. Welcome, Panit. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I'm fine. And I'm also expect to learn from you also.
Yeah, so very interestingly, you were one of the very first surgeons decades ago to bring phaco to Thailand. What was that experience like to be the first, among the very first to do it in the whole country?
Yes, it's back in 1990. So it's like 35 years ago when phaco, I think, start for some years, but not so long in the world. And our hospital have one of the, like one of the first machine is the Alcon 9001, if you remember. Wow. Old machine. Yeah. So I'm among the first group. And at that time, we have, you can remember Paul Ernest.
Sure.
From Michigan. Yeah, he has a Thai wife and he returned to Thailand every year. So we have a chance to allow him to demonstrate live surgery to us and teach us the divide and conquer technique back like 35 years ago. But I've learned from those days that the cataract in Thailand 35 years ago is very difficult. We have a lot of very hard cataract, and we have a lot of mature or hypermature cataract. So the technique that used to do in those days, like divide and conquer, sometimes not answer the question. So I have some like engineering background. So every steps of the surgery, I think in details, what is the secret behind that? I try to decode every steps of the surgery and look how I can improve or make it better. So that's the start of my journey. So I have to adapt or like modify the technique until we can do cataract surgery in difficult cases. I may discuss with that with those steps or techniques later.
For sure. So in an interesting situation, so you had a large population who didn't have cataract surgery for so many years. So the majority of your cases were very dense or brunescent cataracts and white cataracts.
Yes.
Very different than the US trend at the time where the patients had 2 or 3+ nucleus sclerosis.
At that time, we have less than 1,000 ophthalmologists in Thailand, and with 60 million populations, so backlog of the cataract is so high.
Right.
So that's why we have those complicated cataract. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do really enjoyed talking to you. When I was in Bangkok recently, and I had a nice dinner with you, and was fortunate enough to speak at the RCOPT meeting, Royal College of Ophthalmologists of Thailand meeting. You really have an engineering mind. You see things differently than most. In fact, one of the things I want to talk to you about was I learned from you that maybe we need to rethink the way we approach an intumescent white cataract.
Yes, of course. Because intumescent cataract, we learned that the pressure inside the lens may be higher because the lens swollen because of the liquefaction of the lens material make that. So the anterior chamber become shallow because of the swollen lens with the slightly high pressure inside, but the intraocular pressure still okay at the beginning of the phase of intumescent. Right. Yeah, but we were taught that we have to inject viscoelastic until we can deepen the anterior chamber and make the anterior capsule flat before we start the lexis, initial capsulotomy by needle or by the Rexis forceps. But you have to think about the pressure that we create in the anterior chamber when we inject a lot of viscoelastic. I think the lens pressure and the intraocular pressure also rising. Like from before injecting the viscoelastic, the IOP maybe like 10 or 15, something like that.
Right.
But when we inject too much viscoelastic, try to deepen the anterior chamber. I never measured the IOP at that stage, but I believe that it will be increased because of that. So when you do the puncture using the cystotome to start the Rexis, at that time, the liquefied cortex inside the lens trying to escape from the lens. But when they're trying to escape, viscoelastic that we feel inside the anterior chamber will prevent or not allow the liquefied cortex to come out easily or quick enough.
Yeah.
So in many cases, even we inject a lot of viscoelastic, we can still see the Argentinian flag sign. So my concept when I have this hypothesis that viscoelastic is the problem, it's not the key of success.
So that's different than we think, because we're normally taught that the pressure in the capsular bag is high because the liquefied lens cortex. So we're taught put extra OVD in the anterior chamber to make the anterior chamber pressure equally high and flatten the capsule.
Yes.
But then this may make it more prone to running out with the Argentinian flag sign.
Yeah. If you see when I have a proof of this that in the intumescent that an anterior chamber in those eyes already shallow when compared to the other eyes. Right. So this is the swollen, and OCT sometimes prove that the lens thickness is more in this. So I use femto laser, the flag, to do capsulotomy.
Okay.
And we can see that the liquefied cortex burst out from the capsule, but no radial tear, because the liquefied cortex can escape during a flag capsulotomy fast enough so the tear won't run out. So another clue is from Robert Pinto Coelho from Europe. He used YAG laser to do one shot in the middle before bring the patient to the operating room. And after one shot, the anterior chamber become deep and the liquefied cortex coming out. And if the patient sit at the slit lamp, you can see the level of the liquefied cortex in the anterior chamber. And no running out, just only one shot. And he did, in that paper, he did like 11 cases without any radial tear.
Wow.
So this proved that if the liquefied cortex inside the lens with the high pressure inside the lens can come out quick enough with any obstruction from the viscoelastic, so no tear, no radial tear, no Argentinian flag sign. So with this proof, so I start to design the technique that we can do initial capsulotomy under Balansol solution without any viscoelastic. It's very simple because we already have the IA tip, IAS tip, with the system that we already prepared. And once you create the side port, and then not injecting the viscoelastic at this time, you create the main port without viscoelastic. You can do that without damage the lens capsule because we can do like quick in and out.
Yeah.
So when we have two incisions without any viscoelastic, then use the IA tip, insert the IA tip from the main incision. The AC will be the same as before you make the incision, and the IOP in the machine that we can set the IOP. We can use IOP maybe from like 30 millimeter mercury, or in the case in the machine that you don't have the IOP control, you can hang the bottle height around like 50 centimeter. So IOP will not be very high. So we need not too high IOP because we want to allow the liquefied cortex to come out easily also. So after put the IA tip into the anterior chamber and the AC form, we, from the side port, used 27 gauge needle to go through the side port and do initial puncture in the middle of the lens, just only one, without and also aspirate using IA tip to aspirate the liquefied cortex that will leak out from that one puncture that you make. And you can see some cases, some tear maybe run from the initial puncture, but not go so far because once the liquefied cortex leak out, the the pressure inside the lens will be reduced, and with that, the tear will not run out. So the tear will limit like 1 or 2 millimeters from the initial puncture, and you can also use the IA tip to aspirate the liquefied cortex that's coming out, and also slightly press the anterior capsule slightly to squeeze out the some more liquefied cortex and aspirate out. And when all the liquefied cortex come out, you can see the anterior capsule become AC become deeper, and then the AC become as other normal cataract cases. And after that, we have to inject the viscoelastic through the side port before we remove the IA tip out. We don't want the anterior chamber to be flattened because if we allow the AC to flat, the tail may run out. So once we have a deeper chamber because we release the liquefied cortex, we take out the 27 gauge needle from the side port. And then we inject the viscoelastic through the side port from the other end of the side port incision. You have to go across the eye to the other side of the side port incision. And then before starting to inject the viscoelastic, you can switch off the irrigating from IA tip. Otherwise, if you are trying to inject viscoelastic through the side port while irrigation still run, the viscoelastic will not form like a bolus. It may leak out through the leakage of the incision. So when you're ready to inject the viscoelastic, just stop the irrigation, and then we inject the viscoelastic, and then viscoelastic will replace the balanced solution inside the anterior chamber, and then fill all totally in the anterior chamber with viscoelastic. And then after that, we can remove the IA tip and viscoelastic cannula and use from the initial puncture that you already start. You can continue with the Rexis in your preference, in your normal way, but I prefer to use 27 gauge needle from the main incision to larger the initial puncture and create a flap, the initial flap of the capsulorhexis. And then I will use the capsulorhexis forceps to to continue the rexis make around like a 5 millimeter. So you can feel that you can control the flap without any difficulties. No radio chair, because ACE is already deep and then the lens pressure is already low. So with this, I call IA capsulotomy. So IA capsulotomy technique can prevent Argentinian flag sign and no viscoelastic inside the anterior chamber. Yeah, that's the key. Viscoelastic, I think.
Issue.
Yeah, maybe.
That prevents the fluid from leaking out.
Yes, because when the fluid trying to come out from the initial puncture and you have too much viscoelastic with a high pressure inside the anterior chamber, the force that the liquefied cortex trying to come out will go periphery from the initial puncture, it will drive the tear to the periphery. Okay. Yeah.
So let me see. And it's a fantastic technique. I think we'll feature a video if you give me one. We'll put it in the future. But let me go through step by step to make sure I understand. So I've got an intumescent white cataract on my operating table.
Yeah.
I'll make a paracentesis. I'll put in some tripan blue dye to stay in the capsule.
Yes.
Wash out the tripan blue dye. Now the anterior chamber is just filled with DSS.
You start the side port and start the main incision. And then after that, you inject the tripan blue.
Okay, so either way, but the AC is full of aqueous, only BSS. Then I'll make the main incision. So now I have two incisions, I have a para and a main incision.
Yeah.
And the capsule stayed with tripan, but the anterior chamber is just filled with balanced salt solution, no viscoelastic.
Yes.
Now in my right hand, I'll take my IA probe. I'll put the pressure 20 or 30 millimeters of mercury.
Yes.
Or if I have gravity, 50 centimeter bottle height, I'll put the IA probe in the eye on position one with my pedal. With my left hand, I'll go through the paracentesis with a cystotome or a needle, and I'll puncture the central capsule.
Yes.
Then I'll leave the foot pedal on position one, maybe on position two, even a little bit of vacuum.
Yes.
And so what happens now is we're allowing all the liquefied lens cortex to come out of the puncture site.
Yes.
I'll then use the IA probe or use the cystotome even to push on the nucleus a little bit to make sure all the fluid comes out.
Yes.
Now, with my left hand, I'll keep the IA probe in the eye on position one. I'll get the viscoelastic in my left hand. And as I inject the viscoelastic, I'll slowly go to position zero to turn off the infusion.
Yes.
Fill the AC with viscoelastic. And when it's fully filled, now I can come out with the IA probe. And now I can go back and continue the rexis with either cystotome or forceps.
Yes. That's right.
I love it.
I will send a video to you.
Yeah, we'll happily feature it. Happily feature that.
Yeah, it's very simple.
It kind of just shows your engineering mindset because it's a very different way of thinking about it.
I used to think different. So in some of my talk, my topic is think different, do different for the success.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
a very different way of thinking about it, because we're taught like, no, put more viscoelastic and flatten it. But then you're saying, well, now the liquefied lens cortex can't come out. So it pushes radially and it spreads your small opening to the Argentinian flag sign.
Yes. Yes.
So different. So different.
Yeah.
And we also, it's interesting too, we also had a different take on posterior portal cataracts. One of the panel discussions we had there in Bangkok at the RCOPT meeting. Mm-hmm. Was a panel discussed posterior polar, and you also had a very brilliant approach to that, different than what I would think.
Yes. In the polar cataract, we have to think about one thing that can happen. I call the auto-hydrodissection. I mean that I have a proof of the video that if we have the viscoelastic inside the eye, and if we are trying to start the rexis using from the side port, the needle from the side port, and with the IA tip from the main port, once you start to puncture with the side port, the difference of the pressure inside the anterior chamber at that time sometimes drive the fluid through the initial capsulotomy around the lens. So I call this auto-hydrodissection. Because of the different, because you know, before we start the puncture, before we start the surgery, IOP may be like 16 millimeter right. mercury. But normally we use the irrigating a solution with the bottle height of like 80, that is around 60 millimeter mercury.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a high pressure. So if you use high pressure, the difference in the anterior chamber with the 60 millimeter mercury and compare of the lenticular pressure that may be the same as the IOP in the beginning, like 16. So there is different between the pressure. So the fluid can be driven from the high pressure to the low pressure. That's why auto-hydrodissection can occur. So I think in polar cataract, even you do hydrodelineation to prevent the polar from splitting and have the PC rent at the beginning. But if you use a too high IOP setting, you can still drive the fluid around the rexis.
Right.
To the posterior part, to the polar area. So that I start to use low IOP setting because my machine, the Alcon, can do IOP setting as low as like 20 or 30 millimeter mercury. So we call physiologic setting IOP or low IOP setting. So the chance of auto-hydrodissection, the chance of driven the fluid from anterior chamber around the rexis to the back of the lens is less. It can happen, but the chance is reduced a lot. So I saw now many surgeons start to use low IOP setting in right. many cases. And we start to learn from some speakers that they talk about fluid misdirection more and more. The fluid that may be passed backward through the zonu
right.
and go to Burger space, or sometimes if the Weigert ligaments already disrupt from the PC. So anterior hyaloid maybe have some small disruption, and then fluid that misdirect back can also sometimes go into the vitreous cavity, making the vitreous to hydrate.
Right, we've yeah. seen that.
Yeah, and also in the case that the fluid not go into the vitreous but go behind the PC, go into the Burger space, it can cause PC to move forward. This is also another case of misdirection. So misdirection, we can have like a few types, fluid that go into the vitreous or fluid that go behind the lens. But this is because of too much different of IOP. Before you start the surgery, IOP is normal. But once you use IOP like 60 millimeter mercury,
there's more chance of
misdirection.
Right.
Yeah, so low IOP setting also good to prevent fluid misdirection. Yeah, so it good in many aspects. During the surgery, I think low IOP will be adopted in majority of the surgeons soon once they learn that it benefit many things. Also, if you look at the high myopic cases, we learned that in many cases of very high myopic, the patient feel pain,
a lot of pressure,
discomfort when we input the IA or phaco tip in, and the anterior chamber become deep very quick and the IOP rising and the patient feel uncomfortable. But when I use a low IOP setting in the high myopia cases, no pain, no complaint about pain. Before I use low IOP technique, I have to use low butter height when I introduce the phaco tip and then slowly increase the butter height, AC become slowly inflate and the patient feel much better. So with the new low IOP machine, these problems gone. Yeah,
I think we're seeing now more and more of the newer phaco machines are coming with ability to operate at a more physiologic pressure, lower IOP.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the trend that we're moving towards for the future. But yeah, I definitely see that. So interesting how you approach all these different challenging cases from an engineering background. Now, tell us about your background. How come you're an ophthalmologist and not an engineer? Or maybe you're both. Maybe you're both.
No, I can tell you that I want to be an engineer.
Okay.
From the school, from the high school. But before we have to choose to go to the university, my grandfather, who I love so much, died. And I think if our family has one doctor, maybe I can help. So last minute, I changed my mind to come to ophthalmologist. Yeah. And I think maybe I my destiny to be an ophthalmologist, because if you see my eyes, I have birthmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have birthmarks here. So God marked me at my eyes that maybe. but as my, I love engineer so much. When I was a kid, I invent my like a hobby, invent my toys. I don't buy the toys, I invent the
you
toys myself. Yeah. And when I start to in the residency, in the ophthalmology resident, at that time I see that many instruments, many techniques that our teacher at that time used, but not the best one. And like, you know, the injection of the silicone oil.
Okay.
When I have to help my professor to inject the silicone oil, we don't have the machine to increase. We have to use our force from the syringe, the reservoir syringe of the silicone oil, 10 ml, that big syringe. So in the hydraulic principle, this is one of the engineering principle, the hydraulic principle of fluidics. So if you use a large syringe to inject the viscous fluid, you have to use a lot of force.
Yes.
And because of the cannula that you go through the sclerotomy is small. So that's also problems of the small. We have to inject through a small tube. So we have to use a lot of force. So I invent the system that you can transfer using the three-way, you know, three-way valve.
The three-way valve, the stopcock, yeah.
Yeah. End of the three-way valve, you connect with the reservoir syringe of the silicone oil, the 5,000 centistroke silicone oil. But the other end, the other side, you inject with the insulin syringe. You connect with the insulin syringe, 1 ml.
Small syringe. So yeah. Much less force.
Yeah. So when you inject, you just transfer using the the three-way valve to switch. Then you can inject the silicone oil from large syringe to the small syringe to fill the small syringe, and then you switch to the injecting
inside the eye
position. you inject from the insulin syringe, the silicone oil in the insulin syringe will be very easy inject with one finger into the eye. That 1 mL of silicone oil, and then you refill and then re-inject 5 times to fill the whole eye with the silicone oil. So with this system, I published in the Ocular Surgery News at that time that my idea of injecting the silicone oil with one finger using the hydraulic principle to adapt. So in the hospital, we don't have to buy the silicone oil machine. That's the one of the engineering mind that you can put. And also, I think in phaco emulsification, we have also how to improve fluidics, how to improve the techniques. As you know that when we make a groove, before we crack or disassemble the nucleus,
right,
normally we were taught to sculpting, right, to bevel up and start
bevel
to
up. Sculpt, right.
Bevel up, yeah. So in very hard cataract, you have to increase the power, ultrasound power, to be able to emulsify the lens when you're sculpting to right. Make the groove deeper. But you have to move forward when you sculpt a little slow to allow time for the tip to emulsify the nucleus.
Right.
Or you can also move the tip, but cut the nucleus deeply, deeper and deeper in a thin slice. I mean, not go as a thick slice. In softer cataract, we can go deep at one time. But in hard cataract, you have to slide deeper and deeper, a thin cut. So I think about fluidics of the vacuum and flow. And I learned that if we use bevel down to make the groove,
okay,
so the movement is not go forward, it will be going downward. Downward. But when you use bevel down, the tip will occlude. If we set the vacuum to about 150 millimeter mercury, that's not so high. When we bevel down, when we touch and occlude it on the surface of the nucleus, the vacuum will build up, and then ultrasound power that you used at that time will be more efficient. Because you have two parameters. You have the power, like when you hit someone face,
okay,
the face will bounce away. This man will not hurt so much. But if you use another hand to hold, like in Thai boxing,
oh,
with another hand to hold, you hit with the same force.
It's much worse.
This man hurt more,
right?
Right, because you have this holding force. This holding is the vacuum. This is the ultrasound power.
Oh.
With the same power, but with the adding of the holding force, emulsification will be much more efficient.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the technique that I use for 35 years when I learned from my beginning that hard nucleus, we cannot sculpting sometimes. Then instead of giving up and do ECCE, I start to think about how to make it more efficient in emulsification. So just bevel down and use some vacuum, not much. If you use too much vacuum, the tip, bevel down tip, will stuck into the nucleus.
Right, for sure.
And in that, if that happen, you have to use your side port, hook or chopper to disengage.
Push it off, yeah.
Yeah, but if you use like a not too high vacuum, you can just in position one, and then you can come up and then do overlapping. Like if you want to make a long groove, you start from the proximal part of the groove and go like a 1 tip diameter depth, and then overlapping to the front, to the left side, right side, until you have the groove of the dimension that you need. But initially, it's not deep enough. Maybe it's just only 1 tip diameter depth. But right. The second pass, you can go. So it's just like making the overlapping like an Olympic ring. Overlapping
rings, yeah. They look exciting.
Yeah. And then to go deeper. So you the tip will go downward and come up, downward and come up, and overlapping, not go forward like you sculpt. You do not push forward. You have to go downward, but deeper and deeper, not go too deep at one time. So
you got to think differently. So again, we're for a normal nucleus, we think about scooping, bevel up, and pushing forward, making this groove. You're saying going bevel down for a dense nucleus, 150 millimeters of mercury of vacuum, and then go make your groove by doing these multiple rings, basically your pillars downwards.
Yeah.
Very deep.
Yeah, and then you can go deep enough, and also you can, if in a very hard cataract, even with beaver down, you have to go down a little slowly, and you don't have to afraid that you will go too deep, because I have a clue how deep to go. So when you go deeper and deeper, layer by layer, once you reach the the posterior Y suture, is located the layer in the hard where the hardcore nucleus interface with the soft outer shell nucleus. This is where the Y suture located. At this layer, the nucleus is not like a stick too strong. So when you reach that layer, the last layer will be vacuum up, just like when you vacuum your floor at your home, the floor at your home by the vacuum cleaner. You reach the piece of paper on the floor. That piece of paper will be vacuumed by the vacuum cleaner up, and you can see suddenly the floor is smooth. So I call smooth floor sign. So you can see, and
then you know how deep you are.
Yeah, that's another observation. So you know that 1 tip diameter is about like 0.9 mm.
Right.
So the lens thickness is 4.5 to 5 mm. Right. Yeah. So at the posterior Y suture, you have to go from the anterior capsule to that level 3.5 tip diameter.
Yeah.
So you at the floor still left 1.5 tip diameter. That's more than 1 millimeter. That's deep enough. So I learned this because when I reached the smooth floor sign at the posterior Y suture, I always tilt up the segment to see how much I left at the floor.
That makes sense.
I see that. When I reach the smooth floor at the posterior Y suture, I left 1.5, not less than 1 tip diameter. So for beginners who are afraid of going too deep, you can from the anterior capsule, if you go to more than 3.5 tip diameter and you not see the smooth floor, then it's also enough to crack. In hard cataract, if we don't go to that depth, cracking is not complete. It will be like jigsaw interlocking, and the floor will not crack, totally crack, and then removing the first segment in very hard cataract, if the segment still attached to another segment, is sometimes not only difficult, but it's dangerous also to the sonu. Because right. We try to drag one out and the rest of the nucleus also move and right. Stress the sonu. Yeah, that's the bevel down, just to make the groove. Yeah.
Such an interesting way of approaching it. Very interesting. Now, obviously, you've taught a whole generation of young Thai ophthalmologists all these tricks and techniques.
Yeah.
And then they've gone and done so much. But you also, I learned, started a program to help finish the cataract backlog in Thailand. And your program already has helped 100,000 patients.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about that program. That's amazing.
Yeah. Because we have so much backlog, more than 100,000 at 20 years ago. So okay. I have to clear the backlog. And also new cases also accumulating every year. So it's very difficult to do. So that's why we have to do iCam back more in the past, but now the backlog clear and we still have, but we have clear majority of cases of the blinding cataract already. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I have another concept that I want to discuss with you.
Yes, please tell me.
Yeah. Once you have a groove and ready to apply the force for the cracking.
Crack it, okay.
You crack. And I learned from your video, one of your video that you teach, you have to put the two instruments deep to the floor.
Right, deeper in the groove.
In the groove, to applying the force. But to me, I think that is good for most of the cases. But for a very hard cataract, you have to use like a strong force to do it, because you try to like separate the nuclear fiber all at once if you use the true instrument deep on the groove. But to me, I do that other thing. It's maybe not right, but I think different, as you know. So the concept is that if like you have a piece of paper like this, okay. And you're trying to tear this piece of paper by trying to split the paper by your force all at once, a thin piece of paper will be very, very,
very strong.
Strong. But once you start from one side, and then you just slowly crack it, tear it like this, the fiber of the paper will be torn one fiber after another.
Right.
And so that's why you use less force. And also for the physics of the force, the two instruments that you put on the most upper top of the groove will have the, we call you have like when you know the children play on the how you say the board.
The seesaw back and forth.
Yeah, seesaw. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're farther out at the end, it's easy, it's better for you.
Yeah, that's right. So once we applying the force on the top, then it can slowly separate. And then when you have to reach the floor, it won't, because your force cannot do in that position. And then I have to divide the using of forces into two stages. I call this stage top to bottom stage. Top to bottom.
And then do and bottom then,
top. Yeah, top to bottom. And after that, the second stage I call periphery to central.
Okay.
Then you place the two instruments on the groove floor on the low part, but you have to use the two instrument in the frontmost of the groove.
Right.
In the frontmost of the groove, but on the floor, and then applying the force. It again, the floor that not separate at that time will be torn from periphery to central.
Right.
Like also you have another piece of paper on the floor. You tear it from periphery to central. But also with that in the single step, the other end of the floor still not crack. You have to move the two instruments on the floor again, but at the incision site, and
right.
applying the force again to complete the tear.
Yeah.
So there are two steps, top to bottom and periphery to central.
That makes a lot of sense. So the normal way of thinking, so you're making a groove with this very dense nucleus. Normally we say put the instruments deep in the center of the groove and push apart. But that requires actually more force. It's actually more difficult. So we should go to the distal end of the groove and start the crack there.
In the middle first. Middle of the groove. Middle.
And then the last step is going from the periphery to the center.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
So
I'll try these tricks.
Yeah. With this technique, the nuclear fiber will split one after another. So very little force that you need. So in a hard cataract, we can crack it. So also this concept have to use during the chop. You know, when we bury the tip in a hard cataract, bury the tip close to the surface of the nucleus. And then once you bury the tip, you do the chop. And then once you apply the force, it will separate from top to bottom with the shot. And then the second stage, you move the tip along the initial separation to the most periphery as far as you can. And then you apply the second force to separate from periphery to central. The first chop that you do will with the second application of the force will come to the apex of the segment. But you have to use the hook to follow the separation, the periphery to central.
Right.
You follow, and then you go to the center at the segment, the apex of the segment, and separate the apex. So the segment will be separate totally with the two steps, top to bottom and periphery to central. With the chip, you can apply the same principle.
That's really a fantastic. Now, I also enjoyed hearing about, you have engineering projects outside of ophthalmology. In fact, you have a project now with lithium ion batteries.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me, you have a workshop, so you are absolutely an engineer. So you have an engineering workshop where you come up with other ideas, even things outside of ophthalmology, like your batteries.
You know, when I just graduated from the ophthalmology resident and work in my first hospital, there is no standby generator for the OT. And if we have blackout, then no microscope, something like that. So I have electronic background. I can design the electronic circuit because it's my hobby. So I use one night to design the circuits for the standby generator control.
Wow.
And then I go to the electronic shops to buy the components, and then using another night to assemble the circuits that control the standby generator. And we bought the generator with the starter, the electric starter, and I have to read the manual of the generator that they said, like, you have to start the engine and wait for a few minutes until it warm up, and then you can use the electric without damage the engine. So I have to design the timing control to do that before we can transfer the electricity to the system. And when the grid power come back, you can transfer the electric power from the grid back to the OT. And you have to wait another few minutes for the engine to cool down.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have to, I have to design the circuit to have that part also to run the engine another few minutes before stop the engine. Yeah. That's my invention when I'm already an ophthalmologist. And also, when I moved to another hospital, they don't have the nurse calling system.
Okay. You know?
Yeah. So I have to use another night to design the circuits for the nurse calling system with the 35 beds in the ward.
Yeah.
And with the control at the nurse station to know which beds required assistance when with the nurse calling system. And I save a lot of money for the hospital because I use like $200 US dollars instead of like you have to use like 10,000 US or more.
That's so smart.
Yeah. I still like for the lithium battery. At my home, I design my own backup system for electricity blackout. So before this, a few years ago, I used the lead acid battery.
Lead acid, yeah.
It cannot last long and also the pollution. So when the lithium battery start to come to the market, I designed a circuit to control the charging and the discharging, and also by the cells, and build my own lithium battery and use at my home. Yeah, and then I extend to my hospital. You know, the hospital in Thailand, we have a big space. We have used the golf cart to transport. And that also used the lead acid. So I replaced the golf cards with my lithium battery. Yeah, and it lasts for 10 years instead of a few years for the lead acid.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And
it lasts longer, probably provides more amperes of current, and also probably is lighter weight.
Yes, lighter weight, lasts longer. And there are many benefits of this lithium battery. Then I now retired from the government hospital 6 years ago. So I start my company, the battery company, now I have battery that replace like cars battery, car starting battery, motorcycle starting batteries, the backup system. So every type of batteries that used to use lead acid, we can replace with the lithium or sodium. Now start to use a sodium battery that is also better than the lithium battery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Most, gasoline powered cars, right, have these big, heavy lead acid starting batteries. Although now we're seeing, especially like racing cars, come with the lithium ion batteries just for starting batteries because they're better, but they're a little bit more expensive, right?
Now the cost is running down, and also it's also save the petrol. Maybe you have to think like this: for the lead acid, the generator of the car has to charge the battery all time, because the battery cells, they have six cells in the lead acid, has to be, we call, balancing. Every cells will be at the same volts. But for lithium battery, we have special circuits to do the balancing. So when the battery, the lithium battery or sodium battery full charge. We don't need any more current to charge it. So we don't need electricity from the generator of the car. The generator of the car can stop, and that the generator of the car consume
gasoline.
So the car that use lithium or sodium battery, acceleration will be much better. And also the gas consuming will be 10% less.
Oh, that's fantastic. A win all around.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Now, as if you're not busy enough with all your projects and your ophthalmology and your engineering and your battery, also the president of the APACRS, Asia Pacific Academy of Cataract and Refractive Surgery. And you're going to be having a meeting in June of 2026 in Thailand. Yeah. Tell us about the meeting.
Yeah, we will set the meeting to be like better than ever in the scientific programs. And we will have some session that we talk about something else other than ophthalmology.
Wow. Like,
I love engineering. We have the session that the one who love golfing make their own golf sets.
Wow.
We talk about how they do their hobbies like that. Maybe like dinner symposium that everyone will be very happy.
That sounds amazing. So yeah. That meeting is open to any ophthalmologist worldwide. You're welcome to sign up and join and come to the meeting. I will see you there. I'm going to have a great time.
Yeah, yes. As the president, I invite you all, please coming. I will have the session that we can discuss in detail like today's that we discussed. This time last week in Ahmedabad, India, we have like a breakfast meeting with the experts. So it's a round table breakfast with the experts that discuss with the problems that beginners may ask the experts like that.
Yeah, it'll be a fantastic meeting for all ophthalmologists. If you're a beginner or experienced surgeon, everyone will love it.
Yeah. Please come. I'm also now the president of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists of Thailand for 2 years, the same period terms of APACRS. So I try to like put some of my idea for innovation, new things that can be make the conference more attractive. And yeah, like that.
Oh, I think it'll be a great meeting. It'll be a tremendous amount of fun, and I'd love to visit Thailand. I've lectured in the last 2 years in more than 40 countries, and I got to tell you, my favorite has to be the time I spent in Thailand. I just love it.
Thank you. You and all of you invited, and we try to make it the best.
One thing I realized, though, in Thailand, I like spicy food.
Oh.
But my level of spice is not like the Thai level of spice. Thai spice is another. At most, when I order Thai food, I order only medium.
Yeah.
If you get it spicy, it is really spicy.
It's the same when I go to the US or Europe. Yeah. We went to the Thai restaurant in US, but the taste is not the same. It's like not so tasty. Yeah, but it's okay. It's good taste, but it's not same as in Thailand. The taste will be stronger.
I agree. I had probably some of the best meals of my life in Thailand. I really had a fantastic time. Well, my friend, can you believe it? We've been talking for already 1 hour. I can't believe how time flies. So we're definitely going to put this podcast up. I think you have some really valuable insights from your engineering mind of how we should approach these challenging cataract cases. And whatever videos you send me, we'll feature them on Cataract Coach. They'll get many thousands of views worldwide. And we'll put links down below for your YouTube channel, which you have, which is fantastic. And also I'll put a link down below for you to sign up for the APACRS next June in Thailand.
Yes, I will send to you.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much. Also, it's my pleasure to talk with you tonight. Yeah.
And I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new podcast every single week on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you get your podcast, you find the Cattle Coach podcast. And of course, we have a new Cattle Coach video every day. So until next time, I'll catch you later.